Hi, and welcome to the first Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast of September, brought to you by Shooters in Nagoya. I'm John Gibson, and with me as usual is Jim Allen. What's going on, Jim?
Hey, everything's fine, John. How's everything going with you?
Doing all right. Had a long Sunday, but hey, we all did.
We did it together. And we did indeed. It was glorious.
We're going to talk about PEDs or doping or some reasonable facsimile. I don't know. We're going to look at the top pitchers and touch on a number of other topics. So let's get it going by clearing the bases. So Hirokazu Ibata becomes the first Japanese player in Japan to get hit with performing enhancers get hit with a ban for performing enhancers or something like that. I don't know what this drug is. He was taking eye medicines or something, eye medication, and there's an unpronounceable
paradiddle or Persephone or paradigm or one of them T things.
I'm going to try to say it. Prednisolone. That sounds good enough. Let's go with that.
Right. Don't get too much of that in your cereal or you'll fit drug test.
Yeah. This is the drug that they say, please put this in. Get this in your eyes. It's okay. You don't have to
watch. Provided you're not trying to pass a drug test.
Exactly. And I don't know. It's all kind of shady to me because, look, I mean, I read two reports. One was in Hochi and another one was online. I read on Yahoo. And they were both, they differed in certain areas where one said the team didn't actually tell him that he wasn't able to use the item.
Right.
And the other one said, well, they forgot to report that he was using it still, or was that the fact that he was not supposed to be using it, they didn't report that back to the league or something. I don't know. It was all
well, the team was punished.
Yes.
The team was warned and the team was punished.
Right.
Which, what's shady to me is that they punished the team. It's a Japanese player. Oh, we're going to punish the team.
Well, yeah. Because apparently
a player is out of the country.
Yeah. This is what
well,
goofy
the
is.
Stayed around, but that's what
it's right.
It is.
And it was confusing to me. It was just all weird. I talked to Jason from the Japan Times.
Right.
And he's the one who actually told me because I was out all day and, I wasn't around. I didn't check, the news reports and anything. And he says, hey, man, I heard about your boy over at Chunichi. I'm like, what? It's a drug. It's dope. I said, who? I was
you bought the wax.
And he said, yeah, Ibata was putting something in his eyes. I'm like, well, his eyes were in. And he did have a problem. I mean, everybody saw him when he came back last year. He missed a lot of time last season. Mm. And when he came back, he was wearing those shooting range glasses. Mm. They look like, a little yellow tint. And so everybody knew he had problems with his eyes. But, I mean, I don't know. It's all confusing.
Well, I think he needs trouble with his eyes because he hasn't hit a lick in the last year and a half. So.
Yeah, so get some more. Get some more of that medicine.
Well, get something that's not going to cause you to fail a drug test is number one.
Well, get it approved. Apparently, the other report I read was that he was, he was supposed to say that he was supposed to declare that he was still using it or wanted to use it, and they didn't fill out the paperwork the right way. All I can say is, just like you said a few minutes ago, they enacted this drug policy in 2007, and Rick Gutterson had, whatever he had. Hair tonic is what it, but there was some masking agent in the hair tonic, and, he gets blasted for however many games. And then they come back, Yomiuri Giants infielder Luis Gonzalez in May in 2006. He tests positive, and, they just blast, they just blow up his contract and get him out of the country. He's gone.
Same with Daniel Rios of the Swallows.
Same year. That was in June. So, here you get a Japanese player, and it's like, it's not that bad. And, it's my team. Okay. It's my team. But he doesn't miss a game. He doesn't get a big fine. In fact, he was in the lineup that night and recorded his 2000th career sacrifice, and he had two hits.
He had a warning.
And he's got a warning. Hey, watch your hands.
Don't put nothing weird in your eyes. And, this whole thing is weird because, one, we're not clear about what's being used and why the Dragons were negligent. And, two, doesn't it seem like a double standard that the foreigners get suspensions and the Japanese players get the teams take one on them, bite the bullet for them?
And it does seem that way, and in part because they didn't really explain, which is what they usually do when they get some drug. When somebody tests positive, they say, okay, this is the drug, this is what it does, and this is... If it's a masking agent, it's usually used as a masking agent. blah, blah, blah. But we didn't get very much explanation about this drug at all. All they said was that it was part, or it was one of three substances in his eye medication that were not permitted, and they didn't say why.
Okay.
So the vagueness of it all is just makes it real shady for me. Last year, Maximo Nelson, the pitcher for the Dragons,
right,
he was suspended for half the season, 3 months or so, for having a bullet in his luggage.
In
Not a gun. He came to Japan with a bullet in his luggage, and the team, not the league, suspended him for 3 months or something. I mean, like, what is he going to do, take the bullet out and throw it at somebody?
Well, he throws pretty hard.
He throws pretty hard.
So he can be dangerous with it.
He might hurt your cat. But it's ridiculous to have him sit out a half season for that, and then you're going to, you don't even slap Ibata on the wrist.
I think they may have used the excuse, that because he needed the eye medicine, he wasn't capable of reading the label.
Honest, Doc, I didn't know it was in.
That's right. Well, if you're a foreigner, it's like, well, you're not going to read Japanese anyway, so that's no excuse. Well, you're Japanese and we expect you to read the labels, then okay. Yeah, that sounds reasonable.
It sounds reasonable. But, I'll have to call home and ask my dad. He's a chemist. I'll call him and I'll say, hey, what does this stuff do? What did they use it in? Talk to me about it and we'll figure it out. I don't know. But it seemed like it warranted a little bit more than what he got.
I would think that if you broke the rules and you're responsible for what you put in your body, that he would be held responsible.
Yeah.
I guess he was warned to make sure the team does a better job monitoring his performance in the future.
Well, yeah, they're monitoring his performance right now, which is pretty bad. But I don't know. It seems like all these high-profile teams, the Dragons had Dragons had one. The SoftBank Hawks have had one now, and the Giants, and then the Swallows. But none of these lower-tier teams are running into drug problems. Maybe they're not trying hard enough.
Yeah, that's probably right. They got to work harder, you guys. This is not on the cutting edge, I suppose.
I don't know. You tell me. I mean,
I have no clue with this.
You've been in Japan doing this longer than I have. I look up to you. You're the man. So, I mean, is this something? I mean, having the first Japanese player in Japan, because we did have Japanese players outside Japan, and you were looking that up, and you found that it was, who again? I forgot his name.
Yusaku Yuriki, the former Giant and fighter and the Bay Star. He came to the Bay Stars after he got a 50-game suspension in the minor leagues when he was with the Mets.
Okay.
And now Yusaku is a batting practice pitcher for the Bay Stars.
So, he was a batting practice pitcher when he was...
he was
actually good. Maybe when he went to the States. Probably is more like
he was pretty good, but by the time he got traded to the Fighters, it was pretty much downhill from them. But no, I don't know. I'll tell you the great story about double standards in Japan. That it's sort of like if somebody's big enough, they can get away with something, or people don't want to see them punished. Okay, there's a great story. Now, typically, when there's a beanball war. And the umpires want to prevent escalation and from pitchers retaliating.
Mm-hmm.
What they'll do is they'll warn both benches and they'll say the next time a player from your team throws a ball that the umpire thinks is suspicious, that he's going to eject both the pitcher and the manager.
Right.
And typically they'll warn both benches. Now there was a game, and I'm going to say it was Kanazawa. A beanball war between the Swallows and Giants back in the mid-90s, and the umpires warned the benches and said the next Swallows pitcher throws it at hitter, the pitcher's gone, and so is manager Nomura. The next Giants pitcher who throws it at batter, the pitcher's gone, and so is the head coach. They decided that if a Giants pitcher threw it at a Swallows hitter after the warning, they would eject the Giants head coach because they couldn't touch Shigeo Nagashima, who was then the Giants manager.
No way.
I'm not kidding you. They warned it. They warned the head coach against retaliation by the pitcher.
And you know, he was
never ever thrown out of a game in his career as a player or a manager. I'm sure they didn't want to upset that streak.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this just shows, and I claimed it all during the '90s that the Giants used to really get favorable decisions.
My virgin ears. Oh.
I'm preaching to the choir here. And so, it turned in the 2000s, right? Maybe at the turn of the century, it seems like. A lot of teams are getting fair calls, let's call it, at Tokyo Dome, and it's appalling to Giants fans. I think the nerve of these guys to actually call the play right when any close play just seemed to always go to the Giants, and now
as a guy who is not a Giants fan, I mean I really started as much as an anti-Giants fan, as they call them. I felt so. You know, I really felt so. The evidence of that is pretty slim. You know, it's the evidence is, it's not, I can't say it's not there, but it's anecdotal evidence. It's hard to measure how many calls, you know, what's a blown call, how many blown calls. But I'll tell you kind of an interesting thing. Mm-hmm. Is I was looking this year, a number of players commented on mixing the umpires from the old Pacific League umpires and the old Central League umpires together this year and the differences. And
mm-hmm.
One of the things I noticed is that the Giants had a very good record with Pacific League with guys who came out of the Pacific League umpires.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And they were lousy in games with old Central League umpires. And I'm wondering if now that the Central League umpires used to be run by the Central League, administered by the Central League, which was in fact run by the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say in fact, but more or less the Giants held all the power. They would complain anytime anything ever went against them. And the funny thing is that now the umpires are all being administered by NPB, and the leagues have no influence over that.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked a while back. Okay, even now, right now, as I look at it,
okay.
I don't have the new one. Something's up with my database. But the last time when my database on the umpires was up to date, the Giants were a 500 team. Now, this was at the end of July, and the Giants were a 500 team with PL umpires.
Former PL umpires.
Right. And with the Central League umpires, they were not.
Not at 500. They were under 500.
No, they were seven games under 500 with former Central League umpires.
Well, that's a significant number. I mean,
you don't know who's pitching. There's so many things that it could be that it's.
But it could be circumstantial. It could be coincidental.
It could be just the case of who was pitching that day, who they were facing that day, whether they were on the at home or on the road, and so on and so forth. But I wouldn't be surprised if they're not getting as many breaks from the former Central League umpires as they used to be as they were accustomed to getting.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised either. But whatever the case, we finally had a Japanese player here in Japan, mm-hmm. and he gets basically tapped on the wrist, not even smacked, not even whacked. And then he gets to go on, and fortunately it wasn't a foreign player, and I hope all our foreign players are clean and they stay that way.
Right feet washed behind the ears, guys.
Yeah, and watch what you put in your eyes and your cereal.
Indeed.
But I would have liked to have seen a little bit more stiffer penalty and at least get a game. You know, if you really did break the rules, then get a game, you know, one game. But he starts that night, you know. That just showed you how much they cared about it.
You would have thought the Dragons, having dished out a 3-month suspension to Maximo Nelson, would have punished him with, you know, a week on their own.
That too. I thought about that, but hey, he's
nah.
too valuable. he's
a star for them. You know, he's a popular player. And one thing in Japan is you don't take your popular players out of the game, sometimes even if it's hurting you.
Yeah.
Keep them in there playing because that's your responsibility to the fans. It's not, you know, it's oddly enough, it's not all about winning in Japan. It is, but it's not always the case.
Yep, I know what you mean.
Some pimping going on.
All right, on to our next topic. We're going to talk about the Sawamura Award. Now, this is different from the way the award is given out in the United States, where they give each league an award for the top pitcher. Here it's just a top pitcher for both leagues.
Right. Okay, yeah. They often like to compare that. Well, it's not even that. There's a couple of subtle differences between the Solomura and the Cy Young Award. One, of course, the Cy Young Award, as you said, is given to pitchers from each league.
Mm-hmm.
And the Solomura is given to the best pitcher. Now, it used to be a Central League Award because Solomura was a former Giants pitcher. And the award is given out by the Yomiuri Shimbun,
mm-hmm.
which essentially started the current league setup in 1915. Before that, set up the old Japan League. So the Solomura Award is it used to be a Central League Award. Now it's given to one pitcher who best epitomizes the ethic and the legend and the le- I should say not the legend but the legacy of Eiji Solomura, the great Giants pitcher. Now
mm-hmm.
it's specifically not about the best pitcher, but about the best starting pitcher.
Yeah, key difference.
Because in America you'll get relievers who earn the Cy Young Award, which you know. I'm retching on the inside when the thought of that. But
mm-hmm.
here it's not even about who's the best pitcher, the starting pitcher. It's about the starting pitcher who most fits the legacy.
Right, which is odd. But the good thing is, I mean, back home it's so subjective, and there's voting by the writers, and a lot of the guys
right.
pick regionally, so they pick the guys they see more often. And, you know, they usually get it right. And last year they picked Felix Hernandez of the Seattle Mariners. And, you know, I was fine with that. But a lot of times they just vote for the guys they like or they see all the time. But
yeah,
I don't know
that
the system is...
gets the most wins the Cy Young Award.
Yeah, but I don't know that the system is any better over here because a lot of former pitchers who are
yeah.
maybe, what, 80... 70, between 70 and 90, sitting in a smoke-filled room, and they fart
yeah,
dust, and they right. sit up and they try to figure out who not to give the award to.
Yeah. Yeah, who is most unlike Solomura. They have benchmarks, and it used to be pretty hilarious in the mid-1990s with all the run scoring and the essential changes in the game. To more and more relief pitching, that complete games are just disappearing. I mean, complete games have nearly drained out of Japanese baseball as much as they've drained out of the Major League game.
Right.
So it used to be here, you know, you used to hear these guys, well, it's sad that our pitchers these days aren't completing as many games as we expect. They are supposed to go out and, you know, it was really old fart city.
you need to make your voice a little bit, like, you need to put 20 more years on that voice.
I remember when. Do we have 20 more years on tonight's podcast? I don't know. Just wait, I'll get there. Trust me.
Okay.
Okay. So the seven categories they have to measure statistical similarity with Eiji Solomura in today's age. Now, these numbers have dropped over the years in the face of reality that pitchers are no longer pitching monstrous numbers of innings and doing these other Superman feats that they can do
right.
without relievers and in a less lively run environment.
Mm-hmm.
Which we'll get to late next. The categories are games started 25. This is
25.
Not so hard. Most of the good starting pitchers kind of start right about that many. Wins 15 or more.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not too difficult. Pretty much every year somebody's going to win 15 games. Complete games 10. Now this is almost impossible in the Central League, but Pacific League very doable. Winning percentage of 600 or better. Again, this is always going to be, I mean, this is something that's not going to be affected by any age because
right.
winning percentage for the leagues are always going to be 500. Good pitchers will have, more successful pitchers will be able to match this. It doesn't matter what the run environment is. Next, we have 200 innings pitched. Then we have an ERA of 2.5 or lower.
Mm-hmm.
And 150 strikeouts.
And we got we got a bunch of guys, three in the Central League now who are 12 wins or better.
Right.
We have three in the Pacific League who are 12 wins or better, and two guys right behind them with 11.
And we got one guy who's already qualified.
And we got one guy who's qualified with, across the board. Is that?
No, but he's he's close to being qualified, and the other guy isn't far behind him.
Yep. Yeah. So I mean, you know, everybody probably tends to think, oh, someone would award the best pitcher in Japan. It's got to be Darvish, yep. and let's go. You know, this is a boring topic. Let's move on to the next one. But it's my contention that Masahiro Tanaka of the Rakuten Eagles is right there with him. He's got a better ERA,
right.
Which I don't. I mean, it's hard to factor ERA and your statistician guys, your stat heads out there can probably sabermetricians and all those people. I can't even say the word.
Okay.
You can sit there and analyze everything, but I mean, you look at the way he's dominating out on the mound.
Right.
And they're both right together. I don't think anybody. I mean, if you told people which guy, if you ask batters which guys they want to face, you know, which guy, Darvish or Tanaka, I think they're going to say, hey, they're the same. You know, it's the same guy, just a different body.
Let me ask a subjective question. Who would you, if you had to choose one of them to be on your team, who would you take right at this point in their careers, at one of them being, what, 23 and one of them being 27?
Well, I would take Tanaka, and I would take him for these reasons. Basically, you can give him the ball, and you don't have to worry about your bullpen. You don't have to worry about matchups. You don't have to worry about a lot of things. You just give him the ball, and you figure, hey, if he gives up more than three runs or so, then we weren't going to win this game anyway.
Okay.
So I would just take him. I mean, it's not that he's better than Darvish.
Yeah, I was going to say, and that's different from Darvish. How?
I mean, Darvish, I think, I don't know that you know you're going to get the full nine innings. You might. You probably will. You're likely to. And I just, like I said, there's not much difference between either one of them. I can't make a great argument to say that I want one over the other.
Right.
Darvish probably misses a few more bats because he has more strikeouts, but and he has
right.
innings pitched. And, you know, he's got more weapons. But I just like the fight in Tanaka. I think, you know, if there's just one game and I have to win it, I'd rather have him out there barking at batters on the mound or as he's coming off the mound having struck guys out and because he fights. And that's the thing that we were talking about last week, the heart
right.
can't measure. I'd rather have that guy who fights like that. But, I mean, I don't think Darvish is that much different, and he might not be as vocal out there on the mound, but he's just as intimidating. His stuff is so nasty. I mean, come on.
Darvish has the advantage. I think he makes up for the he has the advantage of that, you know, he's not having as good control with his four-seamer, and it's, and he's getting way too much movement on it,
mm-hmm.
and it gets too much like a running. You know, it runs too much, and you can't really control it, and it tends to flatten out a little bit. That, you know, he switches to the two-seamer, or he switches to the slider, or he switches to the fork. He goes with the curve. He throws a changeup. Okay, well, if you're Tanaka, you know, you don't have quite that luxury. What you've got is, you know, perhaps the best slider in Japan.
Yeah, great.
And you've got a really good fastball to go with it. And what you have is that, and I think you said it, he's a bulldog, and he's got this, there's very little finesse with Tanaka. He's a puncher. He's a fighter.
Mm.
And he's done this in his career. He's been this guy, who is going to go out and win these big games for you. You know, he's really up to pitching in these big games and winning them and, you know, taking them on his shoulders. So I think you're right on that. I mean, if I had one game to, if I had 10 games to win,
mm-hmm.
I might want Darvish as part of the rotation rather than Tanaka. But if I had one game to win, I'd probably take Tanaka. You know, seventh game of the Japan series, I'd give it to Tanaka.
Well, when you talked to me about this topic, and I said, okay, well, I'll do a little numbery research,
right.
and I looked at their width. Their width is the same. It's .83.
Right.
And their innings pitched, you know, Darvish, I like to call him, he's at 175, and Tanaka's at 167 and some change. And
right.
I don't really see anybody else out there who's going to, you know, they might be in the conversation, maybe Utsumi with the Giants, because he's got a lot of wins, and he's pitching well. And Yoshimi with the Dragons, he started late. He might not make the start number.
Right.
But he's pitching well. He's leading in, I think he's leading in RM. We have to check that.
We have two questions here, and one of them is who's the best pitcher and who's the best candidate for Sawa Murrow Award, and they're two different questions. But, you know, we're sort of dancing between the two. But the fact is that the way the Pacific League's set up with a DH and with most of the – with the exception of Osaka Dome and to some extent Cebu Dome, the Pacific League parks are all pitcher's parks. I mean, Chiba's a pitcher's park. If you put those pitcher's parks in the Central League, the Central League would be a much better – a tougher pitcher's league. If you put them all together, I would say Sapporo Dome's the second best pitcher's park in Japan after Nagoya Dome. Fukuoka Dome's right after that. The Rakuten, the Eagles Stadium, is a good pitcher's park, and it would probably be right after Koshien. Next would come Chiba Lotte and QVC Marine Field.
The Q!
So, it's a pitcher's league with rules that favor the pitcher, and basically the only way a Central League pitcher is going to win the Sawamura Award in this environment is when a Pacific League pitcher fails to get the sheer number of wins like Darvish didn't last year. If Darvish had 15 wins last year, he's a shoe-in he had 10 or 9. How many wins did Darvish have? He didn't have enough, and Kenta Maeda won the award. But that's the only time by default,
right?
Because otherwise, the chances are the Central League pitchers are going to win one every 5 or 6 years. It's just it's not a fair fight, and tough. That's the way it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think about the parts, and that's why the Dragons always have a guy up there, is because they have such a great pitcher's park.
Right.
But he doesn't necessarily factor in the strikeouts or innings pitched or something. There's always some reason why he's not out there fighting for some award. And like you brought up earlier, they don't give it to relief pitchers. It's only for starters. And because if it were for relief pitchers, the Central League would have, or in the past probably would have had some candidates, including the Daimajin who went up to Seattle. And some other guys, and I don't know that Iwase's have had a season where he, could be looked at as a dominating closer, but he certainly always got the job done, and he had 40 plus save seasons, so they could have gotten in the conversation and been a candidate at least, but around the Central League, it's not.
Well, the rules are stacked against them because they're not going to get the complete games because they have to come out for pinch hitters. They're not going to get the innings for the same reason. They're not going to get as many strikeouts for the same reason. They are not going to have the ERAs because unless you're pitching for the Dragons, you're not going to have the ERA. Of course, 2010 we had a situation at Kenta Maeda. Actually, that was an odd one. He was playing in a pitcher's park with a lively ball last year, although I don't know how lively the Carps ball was there, but it was better than the dead stuff they used to use.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a Pacific League game right now. And who's the best pitcher? We have the Shohei Tateyama argument that he thinks that pitchers who grew up in the, who develop in the Pacific League, who get a chance to pitch a lot and pitch more, get themselves out of jams because they don't have to come out for pinch hitters. And playing in parks where they can afford to challenge hitters because they're less afraid of balls flying over the fences can turn into better pitchers. And I think the evidence shows that pitching in a DH league is going to help develop better pitchers. So I think that's the other side of that. It's not even the parks per se, but the rule of the DH is, I think, has an effect on leagues developing better pitchers.
Yeah. Well, for this argument, I would like to see those guys, the old the old guys, when they sit around in the room at the end of the season and start farting all that dust out. Belching all the dust out all across the room. That they would give the award to Ma Kuhn, you know, if he continues to pitch the way he has up to now. I mean, I don't want him to just give it, but I would like to see him win it.
I think he deserves. I'll tell you, you know, it won't happen because of Darvish's win total. If Darvish wins 20 games, there's no way in hell they're going to give it to anybody else.
No, and he's 16-4, and Tanaka is 14-4, and I would contend this that those 14 wins on a team where, and we talked about the run support before we went on the air. Run support is basically the same.
The run support is vastly different for these two pitchers. I'll tell you, Darvish is getting 3.9 runs per game in the best pitcher's park in the Pacific League.
Mm-hmm.
And so those runs are very valuable. And Tanaka's getting 3.1 runs per game in one of the, I guess it's an ordinary park in the Pacific League, but it is a good pitcher's park.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between those, I mean, 3.9 runs at Sapporo Dome is an enormous number of runs.
Right, that's a lot.
It's enormous. And the fact that he's got a lower ERA and he pitches, his park isn't helping him as much as Darvish's park is. You said they had the same whip. But, you know, the Eagles' defense isn't as good. The Fighters' defense is not what it was. You know, it's not the Fighters' defense we were used to 3-4 years ago. It's much more, but it's still above average, and I'd have to say the Eagles' defense is below average.
Yeah, especially because of Monty short. Oh, my God.
Yeah, so...
I would have
to have a lower ERA with that kind of run support. Who's my Sawamura award? Who's my best pitcher league? It's got to be Tanaka.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
Will the old guy see it? I doubt it. But, you know, good luck, Markun.
Yeah, well, we'll see if he hits all the benchmarks and if he's got the better ERA at the moment, and he's only lost four games, and Darvish has lost four games. If he can match him there and beat him in a couple other categories, we'll see. Well, at least
if he can match him in wins, that'll be a big difference.
I don't know if he can catch him in wins, but I mean, let's hope. But I don't know if he can catch him in wins, but you know, get the strike up total up a little bit higher, get the innings pitch total up a little bit higher, complete a couple more games, and then they're gonna have to sit around and think. And it'll be a good debate. I like to hear him. Like to get in that room and hear him.
Well, yeah, we will hit that
couple 3 hours.
Yeah, this is gonna be. It is gonna be a good one. This is gonna be as good as the one between Darvish and Iwakuma a few years back. Okay, well, let's move on to the next topic.
All right. Well, we got some reader feedback, so let's get going with fielding questions.
Okay, we've got some questions from our listeners this week, and we're just going to get to those right now. And the first item is more like a comment, but two listeners. Now, we talked last week about what the heck happened to the Lotte Marines Shota Ishimine being deactivated for what we thought was no reason, and we had two sharp-eared listeners, you know, tell us what was going on and saying that he had tonsillitis.
So thank you very much, guys.
Yes, we appreciate that.
Yeah, in fact, they went on to say that he was batting, you know, he had a four-game hitting streak in which he was batting about 500, which is not that big a deal in a four-game hitting streak. Ask Dan Ugla of the Atlanta Braves. But, yeah, definitely, you know, we thought something was weird about it, and obviously we didn't see all the reports, so thank you very much for giving us that information.
They certainly need him. He's easily the best player on the team right now, so.
Well, okay. Yeah, and they need something too. They struggled against the Eagles in this weekend series. I believe they were swept. So they need him to play as much as possible and to be productive out there. Now, Nishiwan from Kanagawa Prefecture had a letter for us.
Sounds suspiciously like an alter ego or some sort of pseudonym, if you ask me.
Oh, you think?
Okay.
He writes another great podcast. I managed to jot down a couple of things. to follow up on, he says, first of all, John, I think you understood underperforming based on how us stat heads view it.
You don't understand the way we view it.
Yeah, you didn't understand. He says you didn't understand underperforming based on how us stat heads view it. What Jim was trying to say was that batting performance has dropped in both leagues as a whole. And Jim, if you're going to ask John which column you can find heart in the standings, you can't claim major weirdness as a statistic to justify a Lions comeback. Great stuff. Great stuff. Yeah. You know, actually, Jim and I had discussed the situation with the hitters, and including Guts Ogasawara with the Giants and Ramirez with the Giants, before we started taping. And the word at that time that we used was underachieving. And so when we got on the air, the word somehow mysteriously transformed into underperforming. And
we're talking more or less about the same thing. People who are below the norm relative to what the league is doing.
Well, that's one way to interpret it, but my interpretation of underachieving was that these guys were not meeting expectations. And it depends on what kind of expectations you have.
Yeah, my expectations and everybody else's expectations are way different this year.
Right, and I think we had the lower expectations because, and that was my argument, and I contended that, hey, the ball has changed the game, just like I did a story. The ball has changed the game. It's a different game. You can't look at these numbers as underachieving, and you certainly can't look at a guy's contract and look at and say, well, this guy's getting paid this much. He should be hitting this. I mean, it's a different kind of year. It's a different kind of year. It's irrelevant. That's what we were discussing. So when we actually started taping, we used the word underperforming.
I think underperforming, underachieving, six of one, half dozen of the other. Essentially, we're talking about whether, yeah. Anyway, moving along, I don't want to go back and backtrack on that so much. So, but the fact is that we have different opinions about what the word means, and I don't think anything's going to change that.
Oh, certainly no. I'd just say, hey, look, a lot of guys are not having the same kind of seasons they've had in the past, and that's just the way it is this year. You have to look at who they are this year and when and how their at-bats are coming. Are guys taking a lot of strikes? Are guys swinging and missing at a lot of strikes? Are they making contact with the ball and hitting line drives? Or are they not even hitting line drives? Are they just making weak contact? And that's why I like to watch the games and see. And, you know, definitely, you know, people like Guts and Ramirez have struck out probably a lot more than we're used to seeing them strike out.
Yes and no, but I think the issue that we had with this originally was that I was so stricken from the start of the season with how poorly Guts was hitting that, you know, I carried that torch around, you know, that as a beacon. Well, you know, when he starts hitting relative to the league what he used to hit. So, you know, he used to be a 320 hitter. So let's say the league is 20, 30 points off the norm. If he's a 290 hitter with maybe half as many home runs as he had before, mm-hmm. That's a big improvement over what he was doing. Okay, so that was my point of view. But the other thing you pointed out, and I think this was good because I've been so focused, I would say I was obsessed with Ogasawara, mm-hmm. that I really failed to notice. And I knew about Moreno because you've been ragging on his butt from pretty much day one.
Yep,
but with Watt and a few of the other Dragons, I mean, I was familiar with the fact that their entire offense was in the tank, but I didn't see that as a big issue. I have a big blind spot where Nagoya is. So that was my fault. Well, you know, you have to understand that John and I work together, and it's sort of like when it comes to two teams, you know, when it comes to the Dragons, I will just say, John, what's your opinion? I have opinions about the Dragons for sure, but I'm not the one who cares about the Dragons. And you know, when it comes to the Swallows, sometimes because given 10 minutes to think about a team, I'll tend to think about the Swallows. And so I tend to care more about it. So sometimes I'll have an insight that he just wouldn't cross his mind just because I care more about him.
Well, the emotional investment level is a little bit different. for both of those things. That's true. That's true.
And yeah, that's really where that came about. I have a blind spot in regard with the Dragons, and we were arguing about, you know, how can the Giants be underachieving and how can you not talk about the Dragons? So on and so forth. Now about the Heart, you know, I'm a big fan of Heart. I like the idea, you know. To me, Heart is, you know, leadership and courage. And, you know, putting yourself on the line when you have to do it, mm-hmm. and staying cool and calm. That's absolutely essential to winning baseball games. The problem is that measuring it is a bitch.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you can have impressions, but I'm not a big fan of anecdotal evidence, because it's always a case of a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. What you see has more weight, or two birds that you know are there, but you can't see them.
Right. Well, you know what? You can't measure it. You can't measure it. But I can tell you this: you can see it. And
okay.
And you can see it in fact, I can give you a good example. Right. I don't know how much of your Swallows you watched over this weekend series with the Giants.
It worked quite a lot. I watched much more than usual.
Okay. Well, they had some tough games. They had some tough games. But you know, the Muranaka game, where he pitches a complete game. He started out really slow. He didn't have a great, you know, early half of the game. Not half, but early third of the game. But he just battled through the game as, you know, a guy who didn't think he was going to pitch a complete game. So he just said, hey, look, I'll go as far as I can go. And when they come to get me, I'll go out. Well, it turns out he pitches a complete game. And it just stood out in my mind that he was not giving up. He was not giving in to the hitters. He was going to battle them for as many pitches as he needed. He didn't rush each at bat. He, you know, he set up guys, and then he tried to
execute cool. You know, he was cool under fire, you know, when everything wasn't working.
But he was having trouble in the early innings. I thought, you know, this guy's not going to be able to finish this game. You know, I kept looking at the pitch counts and all that stuff. But, you know, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. And
right.
And they won the first two games of a series that they really needed to win, because their lead was down to just about nothing, down to a nub at the beginning of that series. And they really needed them. They were into game tonight. They just couldn't get guys in from, you know, with key hits, and end up giving up a home run and then another home run, and then they ended up losing the game. But, you know, that's not an easy team to beat. And to me, a guy like Miyamoto, Shinya Miyamoto, he's the epitome of a guy you can't measure what he does for the team. You can't see it in strikeouts and hits and batting average
and
that stuff, because he's getting into the right position, in the right position to get cut off throws and make plays and do little things that you never even see. And that's how he competes. He doesn't always compete with the stick in his hand or the glove on his hand.
Right. Well, and again, that is my point. It's not that courage and heart don't exist, and that know it when you see it, or know it most of the times you see it, or know it often enough, you know, you are able to identify it in most cases. It's that you cannot see every instance of it, so you can say it exists. You can say it exists when you see it, but you can't. But you're null and void about everything you didn't see, which is most of everything else.
Right, and you can't measure it. You're right. You cannot measure it. You know, there's no
stats. How much is Heart compared to others? Well, you know, it's there. Okay, it's there, and how much of it is there, and how many players have it, and is this play a show of that or whatnot? So,
but I
you
do
know,
think,
that was my point.
Yeah, and I understand that. And I do think it rubs off. I think a lot of it is attitude, too, that you say, you know, well, I made it out, but I hit the ball hard, and I want you to go up there and hit the ball hard, too, and look for this pitch. And, you know, just the coaching and the encouraging your teammates to succeed and that kind of thing really pays off, and it's I still think it's
absolutely
go ahead.
Absolutely, and I think that's the teamwork. It's not the same as Heart, but you know, good team play is something that's essential. I mean, you can have guys who hate each other on the same team and really dislike each other and don't care, but as long as they care about winning and as long as they care about doing the right things, as you talked about last week, and they support each other to the extent, or they push each other to the extent that those things get done, that's good teamwork.
Right.
And that's essential. You can't have, this is why it's hard for a team like the 2009 Marines or the 2005 Giants to do well, despite, you know, do well with the talent they have, because they know that everybody's going in their own direction. The front office is going this way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Hiroki Kokubo is going this way. The coaching, the umpire, the pitching coach is going this way. The manager is going that way.
Another way.
Right, exactly. That time the Giants' focus was on getting Kazuhiro Kiyohara enough at bats to cash in on some milestones with fans and, you know, and viewership, you know, to make money. Mm-hmm. And the pennant was, they just sort of assume the pennant happens. 2009, I've talked about this before, the Lions front office has basically sabotaged the season. So they tried to get Valentine out without paying him because they figured it would save him some money.
Are you talking about the Marines?
The 2009 Marines.
Yeah, okay.
And then we had last year, we had another similar situation. Now, the Lions case is a little different, but the Lions basically told their players, well, you know, we got these guys coming back. You know, we're not going to do this. We're not going to do that. We're happy with where we are. And look, here they are floundering all season. That's not the only reason.
Yeah.
But it's also a reason why a guy like Yasuyuki Kataoko, his coming back is a big thing for them because he's a part of the team. You know, I'm not a big fan of Kataoka's for some of the way he plays, but, you know, he is a big part of that team, and his coming back is important to them. And I think if the Lions are going to do anything, it's to some degree because Kataoka's back and people rely on him, and in that role, he has a role on the team, and having him back gives everybody a little more faith that things are going to get done.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I think I've basically written them off and said that the Lions, you know, the season's over, they're done, they're cooked, they're baked. But, they're not going to catch anybody up high in the standings. But, you know, that run for third place, they're only 8 wins behind the third place teams. So it's possible.
Well, that's the point, is that when we're talking about short few numbers, there's only 40 games left.
Mm.
Weird things can happen in 40 games just because flukes do occasionally happen. They're not. You wouldn't pick the Lions to finish third, you can rule out them playing above their heads for a short period of time and finishing third.
Okay.
Any more than you could have ruled the Marines out of the Japan Series Championship when they finished third and everything was stacked against them.
Okay. All right. Well, we've got one last letter here. This is from Dave, the MPB card guy, and he said, the announcement last week that Vin Scully is coming back for another year of Los Angeles Dodgers broadcast makes me wonder if there are any legendary radio play-by-play guys in Japan. How popular are radio broadcasts of baseball games over there? Well, radio, TV, I think it's basically the same situation. There is really no voice of any particular team as we understand it, or we have in the States, like a Vin Scully who would go around with the Dodgers. Who are some of the announcers? Who are the announcers with the San Francisco Giants, Jim, who you grew up with?
Well, Lon Simmons and... Lon Simmons was one, and Lindsey Nelson, who came over from the Mets. Al Michaels was a Giants announcer for some time.
Really, really?
So,
the teams don't hire announcers, so basically what you get on a local station is you get a crew. And
right. When
I lived in Nagoya, for example, there was a Monday guy. Well, not a Monday guy because they didn't play on Monday, but a Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday and Friday, they were all different guys. And
right.
Whether it was radio, whether it was TV, in Nagoya it was CBC, radio and TV. And then there were two radio stations that would broadcast the games, and there were different voices every night. And plus, I really was learning the language. I really, the first thing was to figure out what they were saying, not who was saying it. So I didn't recognize the voice all the time. And once I got used to, you know, hearing some of the voices and some of the names, I had guys I liked and guys I didn't like. But this was one of the a more difficult question.
Sure.
We talked, Jim and I talked about it in the office the other day, and yeah, you talked about the fact that that these guys sign contracts with the local stations, and then that's about it. That's all they do.
Yeah, they just they have a pool, the you know a radio network or a television network will have a pool of announcers, and they just basically come. They just train people. They put people into that job as the baseball announcers for a year. And the thing, the difference in Japan is that in America you'll have a radio team broadcasting the games, and there'll be two or three guys for the course of a year, and they'll add people next year, and so on and so forth. But in Japan, you have the teams sell their broadcasting rights to different companies during the week. And you'll have, for example, there'll be a main one, but it's very likely, and then when they go on the road, those rights, the broadcast rights belong to the home team,
mm-hmm.
and they'll be assigning the broadcast rights to whoever they want. So it's not like the Giants broadcasters are going to broadcast the games from Koshien to the Giants fans back home. It doesn't work like that. It's whoever the Tigers have sold the rights to will be broadcasting to whoever picks it up in the Kanto area. So, you know, you get the Giants broadcasters for their home games. There's some consistency, but when they go on the road, you don't know who you're going to get.
Right. Now, I asked, I did some research, and that was by asking one of the beat reporters for the Giants. And he said there's a guy, Mitsuaki Ogawa, who was with Nihon Television.
Oh, yeah, I know Ogawa-san. He's brilliant.
Yeah, and he's kind of a famous guy. And then Suenori Yamashita, who is another guy who worked on Nihon Television. And that's about it as far as, you know, what he could name. And I can't tell you any names, so hopefully we have some Japanese listeners out there who remember some names and some announcers that
they... Yeah, fess up, you guys. You're holding out on us.
And well, we don't want to step up. Yeah, we had three people.
Not gonna take any longer from you guys. You guys, you got a lot of knowledge. You got a lot of wisdom. You know,
share it.
Yeah, I know. Don't make us, you know, expose our ignorance every single week. Come up, step up to the plate.
Stop the information hoarding.
Yes.
Don't let it control us. But yeah, I'm sure there's some Japanese people out there who can tell us some of the announcers, maybe some of their favorites or some of the voices that made the game real special for them.
And let me ask you, which analysts do you like? Of course, we've all got our favorites here, but, you know, which of the former players who are the Kaisetsucha do you like?
You're asking me or you want to ask them?
No, I'm asking the listeners.
Okay, yeah, yeah, call in. Hit the Facebook page.
Hold on, I'll give you his number.
Hit the Facebook page and let us know, I'll give you his number. Or send us an email. As did Dave from MPP Car. And I saw his site, and I actually put it up on the Facebook page, so if you want to check it out, his site is pretty nice. It's got some really, really cool looking cars, some old ones and some new ones. So, thank you everyone for the comments. We really appreciate it. We will take time each and every week, no matter how much we babble, we will take time to get to your comments. Babble, he says? I don't babble.
Example that remark.
we'll take the time to address your comments and questions and get them on the show. So we appreciate it. You can email the show at yakyujohn@gmail.com. Hit us up on the Facebook page. Brilliant. I'll give you Jim's phone number and email.
Okay.
Blog, everything.
We've got mutually assured telephone destruction going on here. It's going to happen, baby.
All right, man. Thanks a lot, Jim. Appreciate it.
Hey, John. Thanks for all the hard work. See you next week.
Have a good week. Enjoy your baseball.
Good job, dude.